Imagine this scenario. You're a woman. You think you've been sexually harassed at work. You're upset. You're worried. Now, add another factor into this mix. You're a casual employee, and you think that reporting the incident will potentially cost you work in the future. What do you do? This is actually a dilemma that an increasing number of women are apparently faced with. Susie Allison joins us now, Industrial Relations Officer at the National Union of Workers. Susie, does this happen a lot?
Thanks, Waleed. Yes, in the last month, we have had 3 complaints from women members who have been sexually harassed at work. One of them groped, another repeatedly asked for sex, and they have made complaints to the company that they are providing work for, and within a week of that time, they no longer have a job.
When they're working at that company, how long are they expected to be there? Are they taken on for a particular term? How did it work?
Perhaps if I can put it in context, all these 3 women, that they worked for different employers, but all 3 women are part of a growing, highly insecure class of workers in Australia. So all of these 3 women are casual workers engaged by a labour hire agency. Mm. What that means is that they are not directly employed by the company that they are performing work for.
No, it's outsourced to that labour hire company and they send someone to do the fill-in work.
A third-party employer, that's right. Yep. Now, often these women will have been working for months and could expect to continue engagement for months, but it's only been a result of the fact that they have made a complaint that their employment with the company has ceased.
So that would be a horrific situation for any worker who's confronted with that. The problem that we always face with these sorts of cases, though, is a question of proof, isn't it? It's the question of determining whether or not their sexual harassment claim is in fact the cause of the fact that they're not being hired anymore by this particular, whichever company it might be. And if you could prove that, you'd probably have a fair discrimination case. But it's hard to prove, isn't it?
Look, that's partly right, but there are different issues for employees who are directly engaged by a company to employees who are engaged through a labour hire agency. And the crux of the issue is that employees who are engaged through a labour hire agency are in such insecure employment that they're even less likely than someone who's directly employed to raise such a complaint because of concerns of losing their job. The reason they're in such, I suppose, insecure situation through a labour hire agency is for a number of reasons. Firstly, while there are significant legal obligations binding an employer to an employee they directly employ, that is not the case when a company engages labour through a third party.
What sort of obligations do you mean?
In terms of termination obligations, explaining reasons for release.
Right.
So, for example, when we do pursue matters where an employee is engaged through a labour hire agency, we're often confronted with a situation where we will call up the company and put the allegations to them, and the company will say, well, wait a moment, we're not the employer of this employee.
Right.
You need to go speak to the employer regarding these allegations.
Okay. So if you were about to make legal changes that would deal with this, what would they be? Would it be to create sort of an artificial employment relationship between the company and the worker, or like what would you target?
Well, I think there are a number of matters. One is that currently the labour hire industry is extremely unregulated. And I think one thing that the federal government needs to look at is regulating the labour hire industry. Secondly, companies need to be held responsible for employees at their work site, even if they are employees engaged through a third party. So every worker should count and have the same rights, particularly vulnerable workers like women, in relation to enforcing sexual harassment complaints.
Mm. Yeah. I'm hearing, and I would like you to confirm this if you happen to know, that It's actually casual workers or labour hire workers that are more likely, in fact up to five times more likely, to experience unwanted sexual advances. So that is, their employment status is actually part of the mix in their experience of sexual harassment.
Well, that's correct. And I mean, what you see with sexual harassment cases is often it is directly related to that power play. And obviously when women are in a position where they're extremely vulnerable because they're employed through a labour hire agency, they're more open to being targeted by sexual harassment.
It's an incredible stat.
Mm.
Because it suggests that there's a calculating thing going on.
Look, I think the essential thing is that with the rapid growth of employees engaged in a vulnerable situation, we're basically creating a group of employees who are so vulnerable and insecure that they can't enforce their rights.
Mm. Indeed, they don't have the same rights. That's part of the story as well. Look, Susie, thank you very much for shedding some light on this for us. Appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thanks, Walid.
Susie Allison, Industrial Relations Officer at the National Union of Workers. I suppose it's just one of those little things that happens. Well, not little. It's one of those things that happens with the casualisation of the workforce, isn't it? If you've had an experience like that, I'd be really interested to hear from you, actually. 0418 226 576.